The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 131.
Sysadmin.
Sysadmin. Because yesterday was Sysadmin Day.
That's right.
Right. Did they get you cookies and stuff at work?
No.
No.
Well, that's because when the whole company is Sysadmin. You know.
But did you go to sysadminday.org yesterday?
I did not.
What was there?
It was down.
No.
They needed a sysadmin.
That's you funny. Could that not, is funny.
Could not make connection to database.
Oh,
really?
That is funny. That is funny. I even found a sysadmin Linux distro that I quote unquote tried to review. It was a specialized distro for sysadmin tasks. But, for some reason, the MD5, you know, that little list of characters.
Yes.
I'm familiar with
MD5.
Yeah, the checksum. The checksum. That's what I was trying to say, because I didn't realize I'd be talking about this. But anyway, the checksum and whatever it checks didn't match up. And I downloaded it 3 times. Thinking that if I can't get it right after 3, 4, and 5 are not going to be right either. So I just didn't do it, but I was disappointed.
Did you have the MD5 checksum right?
Yeah. But the thing of it is what happens is when I put it in K3B and started to burn it, there's some kind of a check that occurs saying that the size that's reported in some aspect of that file versus the size that's reported somewhere else is not matching. And so
I bet they messed up when they
I think they
the
did.
Image.
So I thought it was going to be so cool to do a sysadmin distro this episode, but it was not meant to be. However, I do have an interesting story that I will share during that distro review. Yes. So anyway, so I guess we probably should catch up on what's going on, Tony.
Yeah.
Tony?
This week has been a busy week. We got the new computer set up, and holy cow, the difference. We have the new camera up, or it's the same camera we've been using for the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But this new computer makes a huge difference. If you just look at what we're doing right now, episode 131, and then you go back to any of the previous episodes, you could see a huge difference. Yeah. We were blurry and now
and
we're clear. We're in HD.
Yes, we are. And, well, the main difference is that previous computer only had 1 gig of RAM. This one's got 3, I think, right? Or did you add more?
No, it has 3 gigs, but actually the biggest difference is it went
processor.
From a Pentium D, like a 2.4 Pentium D, to a quad-core P4 or P-whatever, Pentium quad-core. Yeah, that's the biggest difference. It was the processor.
And you all are benefiting from it.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Mary. It makes a big difference.
Happy to contribute that. So,
Mary's recycled home computer.
No, actually, it was my friend Ruth's computer.
Oh,
excuse me. She was doing some cleaning, and she called me up. I'm the recipient of all her cast-offs, and I thank her very much. But she called me up. She says, I got to get this out of the house. And I said, I'll come right over, because she lives in Ferndale. So I went right over and picked it up, and then it sat. That's the same one I put pfSense on a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And kind of did a little quick look at pfSense, and then it sat. And then I realized, why don't we just use it for this? So
yeah.
So it's looking good.
It's perfect for this kind of thing.
It is. So, yeah, it's a big Dell XPS. So what else did you do besides get this ready?
One of the guys I work with, I had sold him a laptop like 3 years ago. It was those Dell DA30s. Mm-hmm. And he brings it to me, and he says,
it's broken.
I can't get online anymore. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, he's one of the network guys. He's like, yeah, I have my Fluke at home, my Fluke network testing tool. And I'll plug it in, and I call WoW, and they said it goes through fine. But when I plug in my laptop, they don't see any connection or anything happening. And he plugs straight into his modem.
Oh, okay.
Which it's actually, it's a router modem combo.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we'll bring it in and we'll take a look at it. And so he brings it to me and he gets on wireless fine. And then we have a guest, wired internet. So he plugs into there and it works fine. I'm like, I really don't think it's the laptop. And this is when it's running Mint on it, Linux Mint.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, did they say anything to you about it running Linux? Do they have questions for you? They're like, no, they didn't even ask if it was Windows or Linux. I'm like, I'm impressed. You know, 'cause that's always like the first thing when I would call in the past, they would always ask that first. It ended up being, it was like 3 days in a row he called me. He says, it's still not working. Is there something else I can do? It's like a DNS problem or, you know, can I set a specific DNS? I'm like, you can, but you can't even ping 8.8.8.8. So it's not a DNS problem. Oh yeah.
Isn't he the network guy?
Right. He said he finally called WoW and made them come out and look at his modem. And as soon as the guy got there yesterday, he said, oh yeah, it's bad. Swapped out the modem and it's running great now.
Oh my God.
And that was the first thing I told him. I was like, I really think it's the modem.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, yeah. So he's online now. He says, yeah, now I can see all the stupid posts my friends post on Facebook.
That's funny.
Yeah. Well, I have WoW too and they're a piece of shit. I gotta say it. They're just horrible. I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are worse than Comcast. I didn't think I would ever say that about anyone.
Really? I have Comcast, and I've not had a problem with them.
What happened when you canceled your account?
Oh, it went fine. The thing of it is that 99.9% of Comcast...
Talk into the mic, please, Mary.
Oh, 99.9% of Comcast service calls, I think, go fine. It's just that very tiny minority that make the news. They were professional. They did the typical thing where, is there something that we can do, blah, blah, blah. That's a typical thing that companies do.
Oh, yeah,
we
do that. We have a whole department for that.
And I said, no, it's just really money-based. And so, but I kept the internet, so.
Oh, well, you weren't leaving them completely.
No, I just cut off the TV.
Did you hear about that posting or one of the
yeah, that's what we were referring to.
We
both commented on
but it,
that.
But it wasn't actually on the news. It was like a tech writer that posted.
Yeah, but it was all over the blog.
It was all over
the
internet.
I saw it like three or four different places.
I had people who weren't even techies say something to me about it. I said, oh, yeah, I heard it. But, again, my dealings with them have always been fine. So
yeah.
I just think it's important to be fair and unbiased.
You know, when I canceled my Comcast, they made me go into one of the stores. I couldn't do it over the phone for some reason.
Yeah, that's what they wanted this guy to do too.
I took mine into. I had to return
mine.
No,
that's not going to happen.
Huh.
They were like, "Well, you got to return the modem," and he's like, "No, I'm going to have." And he named one of those services. It's kind of like Uber, but they'll come and they run errands for you.
Oh yeah.
And he says, "I'll have them take it. I'm not coming to your store."
Huh.
Well, anyway, so yeah, so that. That was that with them. So, and the other thing you did, and this kind of is on my list of things that happened because I was a recipient of your emails.
Yeah.
On this,
I fixed your Raspberry Pi.
And you remember when I think we talked about it last episode. I thought that there was something wrong with it because I could only get the red light to come on. The other lights. Sounds like I'm really techie, isn't it? The other lights were blinking.
Little blinky things.
They weren't blinking. They weren't blinking.
A Raspberry Pi is so basic that's really all you have to go off of. It's, lights are happening and when there's nothing else going on. So all it had was a solid red power light and nothing else was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up formatting the SD card.
Thought was already set. See, I was certain that I had, DD'd over to it, a distro that was ready to go, and I think maybe I didn't set something right or whatever.
I don't know, cause, that's what I did. I put, a RasBMC on it, and I just downloaded the image file and DD'd it to the SD card, and.
Yeah, so now I have a new media.
It's running
great.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can carry in one hand.
Did you guys see that new Raspberry Pi that's on?
Yeah, the B
Plus. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That's looking nice.
Yeah.
Although, it looks nice and it's a good upgrade to the Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like two other competitors that are out there. They're a little bit more expensive.
Oh, yeah,
but
like
they're
the BeagleBone Black.
No, no, there's the banana pie, which it isn't released yet, but they're
banana
like...
Banana cream pie?
No, but it's a banana pie, and it's, it has twice the amount of RAM, and it's, I think it's a dual core. One really? Gig dual core.
Dual core ARM?
ARM, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what a lot of the older phones are. And then there's another one, which I can't remember what it's called, but it has a quad core processor.
Okay.
And it has, either a gig or 2 gigs of RAM on it. And the Banana Pi has SD or a SATA connection on it. And
wow.
Yeah, so.
All right, I'm going to have to start looking around. These boards are getting interesting now.
Yeah, you can definitely do a lot more with it.
Huh. Well, the Raspberry Pi, though, it's got a little soft. I have a soft spot in my heart for it because that was the one that started off.
You were a very early adopter with that, too, Mary.
Yeah, it
was kind of cool. It wasn't expensive, so.
Yeah, and actually, the first gen that you had. Then you sold to me, and I'm using that as my backup server right now.
I think.
Or did we do a
swap? Yeah, we swapped. You got the Pi, and I got an SD card with OpenELEC on it.
So. Yeah, that was a 32 gig SD card that I gave you.
Yeah.
And what's in this one is different. It's a 4 gig.
Okay.
So I don't know. You must have that on somewhere else.
I probably do.
Yeah.
But that's fine because it fits on the 4 gig and I'm not going to store anything on here. I'm going to plug in some, USB.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah.
Some, external drive. So we'll see how that works.
Yeah. So, you know, you have a Pogo plug, don't you?
I've got not a Pogo plug, although that may be the generic name for it. It's Tonito. I've got a couple of
Tonito
those.
Plug?
Yeah.
You can use, like, if you share, you can have all your media sitting on one of those and tell XBMC just to connect to
all
your media.
Tonito would have to be connected to the USB drives then, so.
No. Just across the network. Tonito's on the network.
Well, the drives are connected to Tonito, and then Tonito's on the same network.
I understand all of that.
Okay.
My thing is, you would have to connect the USB drive to the Tonito.
Oh, correct.
So why not just connect the USB drive to the Raspberry Pi?
Because it's being, on the Tonito plug, it's being shared to all the computers in her house. Where if you plug it into just the Raspberry Pi, then only the Raspberry Pi can see it, nobody else can see it.
Although.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, the other thing I did this week is I upgraded my Plex box.
Ooh.
My Plex Media
to what?
Center. I went from the, a Pentium D PC, which is my file server, and had like 5 other services running on it. Mm-hmm. And now it went to a dual core with a gig of RAM. And
I was going to say, it sounds like the old podcast box, does it?
It does sound like it. It's not the same one. Actually, if you guys look over here.
This is the old podcast, and this is the...
Okay.
Anyway, it runs much better. Running on the dual core, and even though it has just a gig of RAM, it flies with movies now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Good. Boy, you were busy.
Yeah, it was a very busy week. Huh. How about you guys?
Well, I found out, I think there was some news on this, that the Chromecast dongle that I have hooked to the back of my TV, there's now an app that I think put out by Google, or at least an update to that phone and tablet side app that allows for the full Chromecasting of your entire desktop.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Yes.
That was a news item, but I think you were remote or something that day and probably didn't get the
may have been.
And I read recently, too, where you can throw your Android onto the Chromecast now, too, from your phone. You can throw your phone to the Chromecast.
My phone, for some reason, I can only do it with my tablet.
You actually, like, pick it up and throw it at it?
I don't mean. I mean, throw the content from your phone to the
Chromecast. I'm sure that made a noise.
I did. Oh, you know, I don't need headphones on anymore, do I?
No.
I don't know, but it looks good. I was going to put mine on because it just looks
so radio-esque.
Yeah. It looks
right,
important.
Right.
But anyway, so I was able to, essentially on my big 42-inch LED TV, LCD.
Is it LCD or LED?
I don't know. It
could be either one, Mary.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not plasma. I just know that. Anyway, but I was able to just basically run my Nexus 7 off from my TV. It was very cool. Very exciting. It was fun. Then the other thing, I was in class all week learning options, learning to trade options.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, my God.
That options class.
That's what the big guys do. And there's math, so I have to go back and read my book again. But it was very interesting to learn this because that's what institutions do and stuff. And so that'll help me with my managing my retirement account. But The other thing, too, is I played around with that Bash RC generator, that automatic generator.
Well, it's not, it doesn't generate an RC, it generates a prompt.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I shouldn't.
The PS1 prompt.
Yes, I shouldn't just read the website name as I'm talking and trying to say that that's what it is. But, I did put, a copy of it in the chat, and I'm gonna share that. But Matt is right. What it does is it, in a very easy to use way, it allows you to create your Bash prompt. And even though I'm using ZSH and I have my own method, I just thought it was nice for anybody who's using Bash and wants to kind of move things around. And, but it's also helpful too because the site explains, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, where you place that file. And so that's pretty cool. And I think Matthew Williams, showed that to us. So.
Yes.
So thank you to him.
Lord Drakenblut.
Yep. So big thanks to him. So that's what went on with me. So Matt, I know you have a tale from the data center. Don't you? Attacks?
Oh, well.
Attacks?
Last night, yeah, one of those servers was getting an XML RPC attack so hard that it took the whole server down.
Whoa. So you actually had to do a reboot?
I did. Whoa. I was on the server trying to figure out what was wrong with it when it went down.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And, I mean, does it just shut off or does it just power down?
It locks up.
Oh, it locks up. Okay.
You have to go power cycle it.
Okay.
Wow. Is that where you have to run?
That's what we in the professional business call power cycling. That's when you just pull the plug.
Right. Is that where you have to, like, jump out of your office and run, like, four rooms down?
I don't know.
Through, like, five different.
I'm a fat man. I walk.
Yeah.
But, yes, so I get up from my desk and have to go down through, like, those Get Smart doors, if you ever saw Get Smart.
Yeah.
Mary's been. You've been there.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah, I was there. That was kind of cool. You have to flash your badge before you can get into these rooms.
Yeah,
and stuff,
fingerprint.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And
punch the code.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Super secure. That is, it is a pretty cool place.
Some are two-step off and some are three-step off.
Yeah. So. Oh, while we're talking about that, are you going to read your disclaimer?
No. What I say here's me.
Yeah, it has nothing to do,
with my work.
That's right.
Because now that we have a nice video up there, that they can actually read our shirts.
You can see our shirts. That's
right.
Oh, and speaking of shirts, I've got my Detroit Paris of the Midwest shirt on.
It used to be known as that way back in the day.
Back in the day, that's right. And
back when Mary's young girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I wear my age well. But in addition, one of the things I was thinking of for the episode name was not sysadmin. That just kind of came at the last minute. I was thinking of something about Detroit's 313th birthday.
Yes, it's coming up.
I think it's this week. Or was it this past week?
I think it's coming up. I think it's in 2 weeks.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
I think you are wrong.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No.
I have been wrong in the past, and I will be wrong in the future.
We have this awesome tool available to us.
Called Google?
Called Google.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was the 313 birthday for the 313.
Detroit's area code is also 313.
Yeah.
So did you know McDonald's is doing a thing for the Detroit's 313th birthday? Have you seen that?
Oh, no. July 24th.
It was Thursday.
Uh-huh. It was this week.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
I was going to go to the birthday party at the Detroit Historical Center, but Historical Museum. But I ended up having a customer call because the whole parameters around their install changed. And so I go for my class.
Live tomorrow, but we need to make all these changes.
Yeah, we're installing on Monday, but no, I was made aware of some information that I didn't have earlier. And the customer was kind of thinking this was going to happen. And so what happened is that I don't want to go into too much detail, but suffice it to say that the install model we were going to use is changed. And the customer's happy with the fact that all this information did come together and they're going to get what they were expecting. I'm happy that they're going to get what they were expecting. And
it's always a good thing.
Yeah. And so our install was just pushed out 1 week. I think about a week or so. So everybody's cool.
What about is the hardware already all on site?
Oh yeah. The hardware is already prepped and ready to go. We had previewed it and everything. So. But that's all right. I mean, I explained to them there's not going to be much additional planning because this new method is simpler. So basically the hard work and heavy lifting is done. So that's good.
That's good.
But the point is even talking about that is the fact that Detroit's birthday party on Thursday, I couldn't go to.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think we better get back to talking about Linux. What do you think, everybody?
All right. So what's our first section?
It is.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
The kernel news. And on 7/21, the mainline 3.16-RC6 was released. On 7/17, the stable kernel 3.15.6 was released. On 7/17, long-term kernel 3.14.13 was released. On 7/22, long-term kernel 3.12.25 was released. On 7/17, long-term kernel 3.10.49 was released. And on 7/17, long-term kernel 3.4.99 was released. And that's the Linux kernel since our last broadcast.
The 7/17, that was a popular day.
It was. Well, that's Greg Crowe Hartman for you. He just releases them all. Bang, 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 bang.
It's probably, it was a Thursday, so it's probably just for the weekend. Get that off the plate. Would be my guess. So. Well.
All right, and then next up we have...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The distros for this week.
All right.
All right, so now I'm trying to back. What was the day that we last?
Oh, I can tell you. The last one we covered, I believe, was Crux. So it's Yuhu Linux, UHU Linux. I think is
Yuhu.
The first one, which is actually.
I haven't had a Yuhu in years.
You remember that? I remember that stuff. It was like
so?
A beverage, wasn't it?
It is a beverage. It still exists.
Yeah.
Because there's one that I see on here that I don't remember seeing before.
What's that?
Handy Linux. Did we talk about that on the 14th?
Yeah.
I don't know. Mine only goes back as far as Zorin.
Oh, wait
and
a minute.
I know we talked about Zorin. 14
days was the 12th.
Yeah.
Because we talked about FreeBSD.
So, yeah, we need to go back
BSD.
To...
I don't even see Handy Linux on here.
It's on the 14th.
Right.
Oh, mine is cut off.
Oh, yeah. So it's only one day back.
I'm so embarrassed.
No problem.
No, but these ones were on the 15th, and we definitely talked about those last time.
Well, let's go ahead. We're just going to move forward instead of revealing our fumbling ways.
Okay.
Right.
Whoops, too late.
So on the 14th, we have Handy Linux 1.6, which is a novice-friendly start menu with application launcher and internet bookmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, no, and speaking of, actually, that's a foreign distro, but, I was looking at that to review. I believe it's a French language distro. And they have got, one thing they have that's very nice is a,
it comes with Big Buck Bunny on it.
Yeah, it does.
That's Matt's favorite video.
Yes.
Big Buck Bunny. Do you know why?
Well, they've got.
It's all made in open source.
No, I used it to test video cards.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, do you?
I used to use it to test video cards. Yeah.
Well, they've got, they've done a very nice job in setting up, information and tools for users. They've got a help center that, again, a nice combination of, icons and descriptors, so that people can, take their Handy Linux distro and, have a good time with it. So,
yeah. All right.
I thought about reviewing it, but I think it's because it was either Debian based or it was I just didn't want to be kind of caught in a rut. So I go for the exotics, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So.
All right. All right. So next we have on the 15th is Zorin OS 9. They are Ubuntu based and user friendly. You know. Didn't we talk about this one time that most of them say they're user friendly, but who would really want a customized distro that's not user friendly?
Nobody.
Well, it depends on who the user is because, well, actually there are some distros that I've looked at that make no bones about being not user friendly, or at least for newbies.
Oh, yeah.
They're for the advanced users, and they pretty much say that. And when you go in and take a look at it, it's very clear that it is. But yeah, I think user friendliness is certainly, if you don't have that in your description, what good are you?
Right.
Right.
And then we have FreeBSD 9.3.
Yes. I love it. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
And one thing, and I think that's may have been mentioned, is that the ZFS file system, this particular release of FreeBSD, this 9.3 release, has been updated to support. It's got the bookmarks feature, and then also they've got, this will be interesting for someone, I'm sure. They've got a new shared library directory. It's called userlib private, and that's for internal use shared libraries. So they've made a little adjustment there. And there's a number of other things. And if you go out and take a look at the release announcement, it goes into more detail about these. But I continue to my little PC/FreeBSD desktop or laptop is humming along so nicely.
All right.
I'm really liking it.
Cool.
So.
I'm glad because
I'm fondling my keyboard.
a little while ago, you weren't liking it so much, and we're going to change.
Well, I did. Remember, I did put Kubuntu back on here, and then I just wasn't liking that. I don't know. Well, I think it was the laptop. I'm not sure. But then when PCBSD came out with their last major, I think it was, 10.0.1, all the little glitchy things that were bugging me, no pun intended, seemed to be taken care of. Remember I talked about it running hot? And now it's not running hot. I would get these intermittent crashes.
Yeah.
It's not doing that anymore.
I think it was the processor stepping because laptops especially use a lot of stepping with the processor. And it just took them a little bit to get it worked out.
That could very well be. So I've been actually able to work on it because I usually only fire it up when I'm here. But now I'm starting to use it for real work. And it's doing a great job. All right, Tony, sorry.
Hey, no problem. All right, and the next up we have Crux 3.1.
Yes.
It's a lightweight, 64-bit optimized distro designed for experienced learners. Huh?
There's the experienced one.
Yeah, learners. Linux users, that's what I should have said.
Well, it's like an abbreviation. Consider an abbreviation.
We knew what you meant, though.
Yeah.
Maybe that can be an SMLR thing.
Linners.
Linners, that's
Linners.
Right.
Them, they're Linners.
Linners. And I heartily recommend Crux.
You hardly?
Heartily. You left out a syllable in there.
You hardly recommend?
Heartily. Anyway, I recommend highly. There we go. You can't take that and twist it. I highly recommend Crux as a distro. If you want to learn, get into the details a little bit more about how Linux works, Crux is a great distro to do that with. So, and you'll get to compile your own kernel.
All right.
Which I did.
Yeah.
So actually, I was thinking about taking the Kubuntu kernel on my home desktop and compiling Bluetooth out of it because Bluetooth is built into it, and I don't want it. So I'm kind of toying with that idea.
Yeah, it's something you can do. Although I would suspect it would cause you more problems than.
What do you mean taking Bluetooth out of my home desktop that doesn't have Bluetooth?
If you're trying to decompile it or recompile a whole new kernel because of Bluetooth,
you just want to get Bluetooth out?
Yeah, I don't think
just
there's.
Just turn it off.
I don't think there's
the
enough.
Module?
No, yeah, just yeah, that's what I would do.
Just
turn it off.
Well, I wouldn't get rid of the old kernel. I mean, if something blew up, I would just change my grub.
All right.
I think it's a little drastic. I'd just remove the module.
I think Mary's just itching to. Compile another kernel.
No, I just,
kernel.
Once you do it.
Compile a kernel bug.
All right, but anyway.
You do it once, you can never go back.
Yeah, right. Well, it's not as difficult as you think.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done it. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
So.
I've done it quite a few times.
Yeah,
you know what?
I'm
very thankful that I don't have to do it anymore.
Well, there you go.
All right. All right, and as Mary mentioned earlier, on the 17th, we have Yoohoo Linux. Or is it It's spelled U-H-U.
Yeah, it's Hungarian-based.
Oh.
Well, it says that right there, doesn't it?
It does, yep. Independently developed Hungarian Linux distribution designed for the domestic market and featuring GNOME 3.12 with the GNOME shell.
And they also what they've done too, and I had to translate the site. You know, well, thank heavens for Google Translate because it takes a foreign language site and immediately makes it readable in English.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's faster than me ordering a Rosetta Stone and trying to learn Hungarian. But this particular distro, they've been around since 2003, and the last release prior to This one was back in September of 2010, and that one was called Nerd, which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh.
But they also have included, there's an edition builder, which will help if you want to build your version of this distro. It's available for you to help accomplish that task. And, you know, for certain, there are certain situations where you may not want to put the office suite in there, so you want to keep it down to, you know, CD size or below.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, apparently you're able to do that.
Nice.
And then somebody can download it and install it after the install. You know, Matt, that process that you don't like. Oh, he's got that look. We were talking about that, you know, when you install a distro and the office suite isn't there.
It doesn't come with the office suite.
Yeah.
It's not a complete distro if it doesn't have an office suite. I'm sorry, it's not.
Okay.
Unless it's a server distribution and not meant for desktop use. Anything meant for desktop use that does not come with some type of office suite is not a complete distro.
Okay.
All right.
Matt has spoken.
That's right.
All right, next
up we have RoboLinux 7.5.5, Debian-based with pre-configured VirtualBox running as the Windows or for running a Windows guest operating system.
Yeah, they did they mention on there? One thing that they did, apparently their users complained. They complained about Google Chrome and some of the privacy issues. So what they've done now is the default browser in this this release of RoboLinux is Firefox stable version 30.0. So they've also apparently they users this guy when people talk to him or people send him requests and things, he really listens to them and then spins out a new version, which I think is why we see so many releases of RoboLinux.
Nice.
But
they've only got Firefox 30 in there?
No, it's Firefox 30 is the default. You can, in other words, you can install another browser, but the default that they use is Firefox 30 and not Chrome.
Fedora's 31.
Oh, well, we'll be talking about Fedora in a little bit. And then the other thing, too, about RoboLinux is that they have added some, again, based on user feedback, a few more programs. Audacity is now part of the mix by default. And Pigeon, which is the chat client, they've got a encryption plus a Twitter plugin.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, apparently you can tweet from Pigeon.
If you're gonna,
I didn't know pigeons could tweet, but I guess you can now.
Oh, you can do a lot of stuff with Pigeon.
I use Pigeon at
work to connect to my AIM and to our new HipChat. I use Pigeon for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can also connect to IRC channels with Pigeon, and I don't recommend it. I think XChat is easier to use, but
Pigeon all the way.
All right.
So they put encryption on there, and then the Twitter plugin.
You know what I especially like?
What do you like, Matt?
In our HipChat at work, they have these custom set of like smiley faces that you can do by putting a certain name of something in parentheses, like we have one called Doge and other ones. And I don't see any of that bullshit crap. I see the name in the parentheses.
What is HipChat? Like if you're hip to
it? I think the name of the company is Atlassian that makes it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a...
IT.
It's just a chat client and service for at the enterprise.
You can run it on your own server and stuff, or do you have to run it off of there?
I don't. I think we use their servers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically IRC in a GUI format.
Okay.
So it's like group chat.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we use WebEx Connect, and it's by Cisco. And what's nice about that one is not only is it a chat based client, but you can dump screenshots in there, you can do group chats, you can start WebExes right from the chat client. It's really kind of cool.
It's not cross platform, is it?
Different Windows versions.
Right.
that far anyway,
right.
Yes.
Anyway, getting back to RoboLinux, they also have the SpiderOak Cloud Sync program in there.
Remember, which, I talked about
that. I remember you used it, and they're the only service that encrypts it on your computer before it sends it to the cloud.
I don't know if they're the only service, but they were the first, I think, to really focus on that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to say there's another service that does, because I've been looking into that. And Spider Oak's user interface was a little confusing, because I had signed up, mistakenly signed up for a whole year, paid for a whole year. And that was kind of a mistake, but they did give me my refund.
Oh, that was nice.
Because usually I don't think they do. So I learned a little lesson that when you're testing something out and you want to try the paid version, is you pay for a month.
Right.
Because then you don't have to go through the hassle of the back and forth with the email. So.
All right. Next up we have Gparted Live 0.19.1-1. Gparted is a partition utility program, and they also do data rescue.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I just used it this morning, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, on the 20th, we have Uber Student 4.0. They're a Ubuntu-based Linux distro, which includes special software for learning and teaching. And I remember, Mary, you did a review on this, and with all the software, it's like a ton of stuff they put in there. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's just jam-packed with all sorts of educational applications and applications that support the education process. So very cool. A couple things that they did mention, though, as far as in this release, is that there's a couple of little there's a little glitch. It's probably a bug, but they said on boot there's a small lag in the applications menu that you may have to click it two or three times before it displays, and a cache is made. So I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen on other. I want to say Home Run. You know that that screen wide launcher tends to do that. I'll click it, and then I'll click it again, thinking, oh, maybe it didn't take. And what happens is I'm getting ready to click it that second time. It starts to open, and then it gets my second click and closes again. And then I got to click it again. So it almost sounds like it's the same.
Yeah, it's got to build
same
the first
situation.
Time.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that'd be nice because it allows the boot time is faster because it's not doing that at boot. But then it's kind of annoying that you have to click it twice the first time you need to use it.
Yeah. Although they were expecting to have a fix out by now. So if
all right.
If you
and,
just
and
run
how,
the update.
How much does that speed? And I'm sure it doesn't speed boot up. What it speeds up is the loading of the desktop. And how much does it actually speed up desktop loading?
Well, if you click on it and you wait 2 seconds and it still hasn't loaded yet, so that's at least 2 seconds of...
Yeah, two seconds, Matt.
...desktop loading time.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think it correlates. Just because it it correlates doesn't mean it's the cause.
All right.
Because correlation does not equal causation.
Anyway, that's...
Well, let's get into that discussion. No, I'm not prepared to talk about that on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway, they just said you can just run Uber Student Update, and it apparently if it's fixed, if it's available, it'll be fixed.
Sweet.
Yeah. So.
All right.
There you go.
Next up, we have Kali Linux 1.0.8. This is a major update for the project's Debian-based distro with specialist tools for penetration testing and forensics analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And this has the USB EFI boot.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the Black Hat and DEF CON security conference is going to be in a couple of weeks, so they wanted to get this out in advance of that. So they're going to be at that conference, and they said to please join their one-day free Kali Linux Dojo workshop. So they're going to be demonstrating the cool stuff that you can interesting things you can do with the Kali Linux distro. And they go on to say that it's going to be hands-on and very, intensive. So
do you know why they back when they were Backtrack, this happened.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know why they decided? Because originally, you couldn't install Backtrack. Backtrack was only meant
live.
To be run as a live distribution. But do you know what was the impedance for them to
make it installable?
As opposed to a live distribution?
Uh-uh.
Because at DEF CON, something like 30% of the distro
of the laptops present at DEF CON were running.
Oh. It actually had it installed?
Had actually had it installed, and it was out of date because you couldn't update it because it was...
Oh, okay.
Just a live run distribution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. All right, next up we have Tails 1.1, which is a Debian-based distro live CD for strong privacy features and configured for anonymous web browsing. Yeah, I know we've talked about it in the past.
Yeah, they've got... there was an article out this week. There was an article out this week talking about even though Tails has fixed, you know, this particular version has fixed a bunch of security bugs, that there's still, you know, there's still some issues, security issues associated with it. And I was reading an article, and they were just talking about how even though you need Tails to connect to the Tor network, I mean, Tails just automatically connects to the Tor network, it is not that difficult to kind of trick it into taking that that data stream and going through kind of a fake thing so that people essentially think they're secure but they're not because, you know, the NSA is really monitoring you. It was, and I apologize for being a little vague about it because I just read it this morning. I was trying to do a bunch of things, but there were a couple of articles out this week about that. But one thing Tails did this week is that they replaced their Windows XP camouflage with a Windows 8. Now, why on earth do you replace XP and just jump to 8 instead of, say, going to 7? Which, to me, it would be more logical.
Oh, I see what you mean by going logical, like in step from one OS to the next, but...
They're camouflaged.
Now we'll have to... That's like all the work to make it look like one, and then in a couple of years, you got to do all that same work to make it
not
look like the next.
Not even a couple of years. They're EOLing 7 pretty soon, actually.
7 like, or 8?
No, 7, end of life 7 is going to be in like 21.
2 years.
No, it's in like 21. Vista is in 17.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking of Vista. You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I had to look it up one day.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was one thing. And of course, they've got a few minor improvements in this. They've got, they're a little more stingy on the memory now when you're apparently checking for upgrades. So, you know, the idea for them, they said, is to really avoid displaying that not enough memory available to check for upgrades, which is sort of, to me, if you don't have enough memory just to check for upgrades, what the heck is going on? So,
well, actually, if you're running a live CD, then what do you need to check for updates for?
Well, you can install. I think you can install this, can't you?
Well, yeah, I suppose. Anyway.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, possibly, but...
Yeah, because one of the big reasons is you reboot the machine and all of your history from previous is gone. It wasn't written anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, coming up next we have Oracle Linux 7.0. Which is built on the source code of Red Hat Enterprise Linux 7.
We talk about that.
So the evil empire of Oracle's Linux distro is available.
Larry Ellison just needs to die.
Well, you know, and I think was it you who said that they just take and put their logo on?
Pretty much.
Well, but they don't even do it on the documentation?
No, I think they fixed the documentation.
They have, because I decided to go out there and take a look and see if it was just basically Red Hats, but they had put their logo on it or whatever. But I wanted to see if they had reorganized it. They have done, it does follow the Red Hat documentation fairly closely, but they have done some things to make it.
Maybe now, but initially.
Oh, I'm sure
it was
initially
the Red Hat docs with the Red Hat logo and everything.
I'm sure that it was, but I think they've done a little bit more now to make it quote unquote their own. So.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Next we have Ubuntu 14.04.1, which is the maintenance update for the LTS version of Ubuntu that's out right now.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you know, I just got an update, Kubuntu, of course.
Yeah, enough said. Move on.
I just got an update. I love Kubuntu. That's just great. It's a wonderful thing.
Enough said. Move on.
Okay.
All right. So, next up on the 25th, we have Core OS 367.1.0. Are they going along with the numbering scheme that like Chrome and Firefox is doing? They're just doing like a full dot release every, or full release every other day or something?
I have no idea.
367, or does 367 mean something? Huh?
Core doesn't release that often, I don't think.
I know, but how does that number get so high?
I have no idea.
Well, they just made it high. Oh, 367. Well,
it's really, really tiny, though. Did you ever use it?
This is not Tiny Core. This is Core OS.
Oh, then I'm confused and sorry.
Yeah, because...
This is for servers and clusters.
Yeah.
I use Tiny Core, and that's what I was confusing this with. So.
Well, it's got the word core in there. I understand why. But they've got...
Oh, they released on Sysadmin Day, and that was part of their release note. Go ahead, Mary. I'm sorry.
So, no, I was just mentioning...
You know what? I interrupted you, this, and I just did it again. I'm sorry. I'll have to not doing that.
Okay. Where's my clicker?
These comments will make sense when we get to the listener feedback.
Yeah, yeah, they will. They will. So bear with us if you're still there. CoreOS, they've got, this is kind of interesting. They do process management with something called Fleet. And it's a distributed init system for your cluster. So apparently a cluster just basically implies you've got several servers that are clustering. Isn't that right, Matt?
But how did I do it? Together.
Could I get a job at your place?
No.
But,
maybe as a tier one.
Okay. But anyway, so, apparently it's like an Uber process to manage that init activity. I just thought it was kind of interesting to see that. So it's certainly not a distro I will be reviewing anytime soon unless I hook up all my computers and.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be clustering. That's just one of the things it has.
Okay. All right.
So I wonder what they do for that to make it easier. Do they have some of their own tools developed so it works with IPvSADM? Or?
I don't know, but they do recommend that you have a... Tony, did I just interrupt you?
No.
Oh, okay. Almost, though, I think. They do recommend a cluster of at least 3 machines in order to, I think, use CoreOS to its full capacity.
So, what are those 3 machines?
It's not as much fun on a single machine.
What would those roles be?
Whatever you want them to be. This is just
machine. I mean, would one be a file server and one be a database and one be a node? Or
you know, Matt, I think that would be an excellent project for you to look up and report back for us.
While we move on to the next distro.
Not going to happen.
All right, we'll move it on.
All right. So,
that's it, actually.
Yeah, that was the end of the list, but we're on to the top 5 for this bye week.
Yeah, and well, I'm going to wait for Matt to tell us where CentOS is in that top 5.
They're not.
Yeah.
That's right. Number 5, we have Zorin with 1231.
And trending down.
And number 4, we have OpenSUSE with 1351.
And trending down.
And number 3 is Debian with 1501.
And trending down.
And the number 2 spot is Ubuntu with 1847.
And trending up.
And in the number 1 spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2222.
And trending up.
All right.
Okay.
All right, and we're on to...
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Well, I think it should be distros, because actually, and whenever I say that I'm going to talk about several distros, that can only mean one thing. Trouble in Distro City. Because I ran into difficulties, because I have run into difficulties with a particular distro, trying to get it up and running in a way that would befit the review. And so this last week was, or the time period between last episode, and this one is no exception. The first distro I wanted to take a look at was called Void Linux. Now, Void, well, first of all, the name caught my eye. I just thought, wow, a distro named Void. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh.
But anyway, the distro's page or their website basically comes out and says, this is not for beginners. So I figured, well, it's probably not for me either. But anyway, it positions itself as an answer to today's disgruntled computer geeks who want things fast, reliable, and flexible. So would Void Linux fill the distro void in many geeks' hearts, or would it be branded null and void? Let's take a look. Well, anyway, I proceeded to go ahead and take a look at this distro. Now, I think I may have mentioned it's created from scratch using source packaging, and the kernel it runs is 3.14.4. Now, the live environment for Void consists of a grub screen with two options. You either boot Void Linux or you boot from the first hard disk. So, of course, I selected to boot Void Linux. Now, aside from a brief error message regarding my Broadcom chip, no surprise, including a suggestion that I visit the wireless area at kernel.org, I went ahead and hit the Enter key to boot it up. So it finished up to a live boot, and then a brief message tells me I can install it by typing sudo void installer. And so I went ahead and did that, and within a few moments, Void Linux, and a few seconds, Void Linux was installed and running at a command line prompt. That's right. There was no X server, no nothing. It was just a command line prompt. And it was fast. I was impressed with that. So I then discovered that there was no graphical packaging or files, no X server installed. I was going to have to do that myself from the good old reliable command line. Now, that's not a problem. I have no problem doing that. But what happens is, I first of all decided to, of course, wait until I installed it. So I went back and hit the sudo void installer. And it opens a Debian-style install screen where you can select the typical functions, you know, for keyboard, time zone, that type of thing, host name. It took me a couple times to get through the install process because it's completely manual, including running GNU parted from the command line. Now, I have always avoided that. I've used the, you know, I've either done the live CD or I've used the built-in partitioner.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, you know, this is a test laptop. If I screw it up, no big deal. So I decided to go in because I've never used it without a graphical tool. And I didn't have a choice here, but to give it a whirl, or should I say spin. But to be honest, I followed the instructions at the website. And I was surprised to find out that you don't have to know the sector, cylinder, megabyte, gigabyte in order to successfully partition a hard drive. You can specify the size in percent. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I had no idea how easy it was and fun how easy and fun command line partitioning could be.
Fun? Wow. I haven't heard of it described like that.
Here's the command I used. And again, this is your running parted, so it's from the parted prompt. It's mk part, you know, make part, space, primary, and then the first one I did was Linux swap, so it's Linux-swap. And then I went from 0% to 10%. Hmm. Now, again, I was following the website, and I really should have only gone from 0 to 5 because I had a 14 gig swap partition, which is a little bigger than I think you want. Yeah. But anyway.
You should only, with twice twice the RAM used to be the old.
Okay.
Yeah.
On modern stuff, I think you don't need more than a 2 gig part swap partition.
Okay.
It makes no sense. If you have 8 gigs of RAM in your computer, it makes no sense to have a 16 gig swap partition.
Because you're just not going to use it.
No, and in fact, a lot of people that have over 4 gigs, they just disable swap altogether. But that's a little more advanced. Yeah, yeah, it's best to have just a small 500 meg swap.
But anyway,
2 gigs I find is 500 meg is a little small. I mean, because when you need that safety net, sometimes you're going to overflow. You would overflow 500 megs pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think the point is that some of the old rules of thumb for swap space just don't hold water anymore, given the amount of RAM we've got available to us.
Right.
So anyway, again, I was following the website without thinking that, I can only probably just go as far as 5%. But anyway, so then I hit Enter, and then I was back at a parted prompt again. So my next command was, again, make part, MKPART, primary. And then this one was, I went EXT2, because that was what the site said. Mm-hmm. I was just a little monkey at this point, just typing in what I saw. And then I went from 10% to 100%, hit the key, bingo. I had two partitions, one of which was swap, one of which was an EXT2 partition, and I was ready to go. I had no idea. Void Linux supports all the major file system formats, including ButterFS, EXT2, 3, and 4, and Windows file systems, for example, FAT32 and NTFS. So, but I wanted to make a point of how easy it was to set up my partitions using the command line tool. So, because I, again, cool. I wasn't familiar with the percentage aspect. All right, so now going to the installed environment. So after the install, you're asked if you want to reboot or continue to use the live environment. Of course, one problem with Void Linux is it does not eject the CD or the DVD during reboot. So if you don't catch it, you got to wait for grub, select, boot from the first hard drive. Now, I logged in as the root user because there are several post-installation steps, one of which is creating users that I needed to complete. And so then I went ahead and did that. And then the next step, and the instructions at this point on their site, there are some gaps in the instructions because, I went ahead and installed what I believe to be the necessary files to create an X system, or the X server and all the supporting files. So I went ahead and did that, following the instructions by and large on the site. The problem I encountered is that I could not get it to start. So I don't know if there was something else that was missing. Well, certainly some instructions for me.
What about the config file?
I went in and took a look at xorg.conf. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went in there and took a look, based on, I Googled it too, because I wasn't just, you know, just looking at the site. I went out and tried to Google to see if I could figure out what was wrong, and I really couldn't. So I ended up just kind of being stuck there at the command line prompt without an, now for some people, there's no problem there at all. For me, that's as far as I could really go with the review.
You got links?
That
what
review.
Do you need? What more do you need?
Yeah, links. The links browser. You know, I've gone to CNN.com with that. That is, it's crazy. It's a very crazy browser when you're using a command line browser. Kind of fun though, actually.
Sometimes when you're on a server and you need to get an answer for something, that's what you got.
Yeah, go to Google. Yeah, that's a good point, Matt. So anyway, but I'm not done yet. I'm not done with my reviews. So I thought, you know, I can't leave people just sitting there with this half-baked review of Void Linux. But my take on it is that certainly I think for people who want a fast, command line level distro, this certainly fills the bill. And again, it's not based off Debian or anything. It's built from Source. So I think that in and of itself, I believe gives you a quicker, maybe faster, distro. So from there, I started searching around thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to find something here. I then found I found this on softpedia.com, and as to how it's pronounced, even I was left with two options.
Oh,
it's
no.
K-U-I-N-E, so I thought, is that queen or is it quine?
Hmm.
And would I be quine after I got done with this distro review? Well,
Mary.
Yeah.
It was a good
quine.
Joke, Mary. I get it.
It's quinine?
Quine.
Quine?
Quine.
Is that what it is?
What country is it from?
It's not from America.
Really? Shocker.
Yeah. And it's Debian based. And let me tell you this. I want to say it might be, Asian based, I think. I have to go. Usually I go and get that stuff at the end once I get done with this stuff. I go back and fill in those pieces.
But there was no end.
There was no end. Let me go into this one here. Now, I'm going to call it Queen. What do you say?
Quine.
Quine?
Quine.
Quine Linux. All right. Well, first of all, there's a live, I burnt it to a CD and I threw it in just to see how it would roll. And, Quine Linux, with a nod to Matt, boots to a command line style dash with four entries. I can boot live. I can boot live failsafe or failsure. I can boot to memtest, or I can boot the first hard drive. Now, Quine then continued to a second command line style dashboard where I was presented with eight options because I had selected boot live. I could then go to config, install, admin. I think you're getting the picture. There are a number of other options. So I went ahead, and even selecting some of these offered you more options. It was like opening up one of those Russian doll things where you'd have
a nesting doll.
Yeah, a nesting doll. Oh, there's another doll. Oh, there's another doll. Will this ever end? But anyway, but after selecting,
I have a video for you. I think
you posted that. I watched very carefully where the edit occurred. I could tell where it kind of just suddenly grew in his hand when he was, the doll just kind of boof. Anyway, but
it was a nice job though.
I
watched it for about 6 minutes before I figured out it was never going to end.
Well, oh my God, Matt, I'm going to move on. I'm going to spare you my funny comments on that one. But anyway, so, I went ahead and, I selected, install, and, I then had two options. I could set up a persistence, or I could set up an HD/USB install. And I selected persistence, and then was told, sorry, there's already persistent disk storage. So I must have picked up my hard drive, the internal hard drive, and considered that persistent disk storage, which it kind of is, but that's not what I was expecting to see when I saw it. I thought they were going to say insert a, USB thumb drive or external storage, whatever. Anyway, so then I went ahead and went back and selected the hard drive. And then, I went ahead and started the install. So I first had to select disk, and then there was a warning about erasing, and that's a typical thing. Then the system complained about the hard disk being mounted, which was kind of odd because I was running off the CD, and I had done nothing to really mount that disk, and maybe it was just a carryover from that persistent, activity I had just gone through. And then I went through a few more install screens, and there was some complaining about a bad magic number. Now, I don't know what that is, but I have a feeling it has to do something with some low-level disk activity or something along those lines. But it was in the super lock, so I know we're talking some low-level disk stuff.
Yeah, you know, actually, that was I was having that issue with your SD card.
Really?
That's the error I was getting when I was trying to mount it. Magic block problems.
Okay. But anyway, then this just continued spinning and then the install completed. So I don't know what was going on there, but what happens is that the installer just basically copies the live system to the hard drive, and it took only a couple minutes and it was done. That's all it did.
Kind of like a puppy frugal install?
Somewhat, but and then I went ahead and reboot to see what happens, and so I continued to type up the review as the system rebooted. Unfortunately, there was no automatic rejection of the CD, and I had to go back through again. Now, next up was a grub rescue prompt due to some unknown file system, and at that point I'm thinking, oh, it had to do with that whole magic number super block activity. It caught up with me, and now I'm going to have to go through and fix it. But after a quick search, I found the grub commands I needed to set the boot partition and all of that. And I was going to try that, and I thought, hell no, I'm just going to reinstall the system. So
yeah.
I went ahead and reinstalled. And this time I don't see the errors I saw before. So I don't know what was going on, but I was happy not to see that. And then shortly after that, the system booted to a friendly grub prompt. And after the booting, then I'm back at the options that were available. I was expecting a desktop, but I didn't get it. I got this little dashboard again, kind of like a command line dashboard again. And once I selected desktop, then I was able to go ahead and get the desktop. And actually, before I did that, I went to set the admin password because that was one of the options. I never got to the desktop. I set the admin password, and the default was admin, okay? And I went ahead and I decided to use my standard admin password that works on everything else. And Quinet Linux said, no, it's too short, and you don't have this, this, and this. And I'm thinking, what? Their admin, their default password didn't even conform to that requirement. So they're giving me a hard time. So I went ahead and I put in a longer password, and then I rebooted to go ahead and log in. Well, as it turned out, I couldn't log in. I went in with a root. I went ahead and tried it with user root, with user admin, because I had never created a regular user. Mm. I could not log in, Then I'm getting really ticked off, and I'm thinking, well, this distro is a piece of crap. But anyway, here's what really threw me. This is going to be kind of weird. I decided to go back and reboot to the live CD and for the third time. I usually try three times, and if it doesn't work the third time, I'm out of there. I tried to reboot the CD, and it would only go to the hard drive. I could not set the boot parameters to boot off the CD. I know, Matt, I was amazed. I went into the BIOS even and tried to set the order. It was only until I disabled the hard drive boot parameter in the BIOS that I could finally boot the CD. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about this because I found out when I use Rescatux, I found some interesting information. You guys are probably going to be able to tell me you'll probably be able to confirm for me what I saw, and what my reasoning, was as far as what the problem was. A lot of wuzzes there, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm. That boggles my mind, though, that the live media wouldn't boot when it saw the image on the disk.
I hit, in the Dell initial post, whatever.
Yeah.
You've got hit F12.
Yeah, yeah.
I hit F12.
Media.
Yes, exactly. I selected the DVD CD. No, it went right to Grub off the hard drive. I have never, ever, ever seen
and
that.
And the disk wasn't damaged because you then booted the disk.
I did. So.
That is weird.
It is very weird. But let me explain to you what happened. So yeah, so, I was in this loop. The reboot put me back in at the installed version on HDA1 via Grub. I tried again, same results. Then I decided to use the CD and reinstall. Shockingly, I was again back at the group, as I just said. I'm going to kind of skip through that because we've just talked about it. Wow, what a major mess. That's what I said. Then I decided to see if a rescue CD could help me out of this mess. The only problem was that I could not boot from the CD because think about it. I downloaded Rescatux, put it on a CD, and then tried to boot from it. No, I was back into the Grub prompt for the first hard drive. I am not kidding you. As I said, it was only.
This sounds like a hardware problem.
No,
I think
it's not. Let me tell you, it's not a hardware problem. I went into.
No, you're right. I don't think it's a hardware problem. I think it's a PEBCAC.
Oh. All right, gentlemen, you're going to be saying, you know, Mary, you were right.
All right,
a few moments, okay. Because I'm going to tell you what I saw once I started up the partition thing, because that's where, the file system check. I'm going to tell you what I saw. So anyway, because ultimately, it's running Deepin Linux right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, before I came here, I finished the install of Deepin Linux on it, so it's not a hardware problem. I'm going to tell you what the problem was. But anyway, so I downloaded Rescatux, could not get it to roll until I disabled booting from the hard drive in the BIOS. I turned that off, so it would not boot from the hard drive, and that was how I was able to get into Rescatux. Now, I'm going to share how Rescatux saved me from Quinet Linux. It boots to an LXDE desktop. Nothing fancy is needed when you're desperate. There's a Resc app wizard greeted me and contained all the tools to rescue my test laptop, as well as a documentation window with quite a bit of information regarding the available tools. I checked the file system button to see what I had there. So then what happened is a list of available disks and partitions appeared, and imagine my surprise when I saw loop one as a partition with Debian GNU Linux description. So apparently, now, here's my thinking, and again, I don't know a lot about this, but you guys can confirm this, or maybe one of our listeners, is that when it copied the contents of the CD over during the install, that it then took that file, because I think it only copied it as a single file, I'm not sure, I blew it away, I was so mad at it, that it then connected it as a loopback device, loop one. And so, it was done at such a low level that, it was always mounting and connecting that way, and I couldn't get out of it. I think that had something to do with it. What do you think? Does that sound good?
I vote for intermittent hardware problem.
I disagree. But anyway, I thought loop one was automatically mounted. I just thought that it was mounted and it was seen, and that's what happened. Hang on a minute. Let me tell you what's going on here. So then I fired up Gparted. the graphical version. And, an interesting sight greeted me. I had five partitions with a bit of empty space at the end of my hard drive. And here are my partitions. I had Dev SDA1. Now that was set up as the Quinet root. And that was 1.01 gig. And these were all EXT4 except for the swap. SDA2 was, /temp. And that was 2.01 gig. SDA3 was swap, and that was 2.01 gig. That was the only thing it did right. and then 4 was extended partition. And then I had 5, which was /user, you know, USR. And then 6 was /var. And that was 142 gigabytes.
Where was home?
There was no home. And at the very end, unallocated was 2.49 megabytes unallocated. So I had this little space at the end.
Well, depending on the partitioner that it uses, that happens. It's a result of rounding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened probably when, you guys were mocking me for those little spaces I had. I didn't do that. I think the partitioner did. So, but anyway, suffice it to say, I blew all those partitions away and created four primary ones plus a 4 gig swap. I then rebooted the selected, I went into Deepin Linux, got that going, and then ended up installing it. I then rebooted again, went in and re-enabled the hard drive, and now I'm running Deepin Linux just fine. But that's how I had to fix it. It was the oddest thing I've ever seen, and I think it had to do with that loop one. I don't know. It's the only thing I can think of. So
it's unlikely.
Pepkek.
It's unlikely.
Well, okay. The reason I say it's unlikely is because the loop one is within the Linux distro or whatever, the Linux operating system. And all booting happens is way before the OS is even loading.
Remotely loading.
So I think that
there was
something in the boot process or the boot order.
Now Grub could have been effed up.
Yeah.
You know, I went in, I went in looking because I went into edit mode just to see what was going on, and there wasn't anything completely out of the ordinary. There's some things that I was going to have to go look up, and I just thought, I don't know.
That's on the HP laptop, right?
It's on the laptop I got from you. It's a Dell laptop.
It's Dell. So yeah. if you hit F12 when it's booting, then that.
I do.
And you chose the CD-ROM to boot off of that, and then it still went to the hard drive?
Yes, exactly.
Huh.
And it wasn't until I disabled when you have to go into the BIOS screens itself.
Yeah.
You know, there's that little program that lets you make changes.
Yeah.
I went in there and I turned off the boot from, I had to uncheck it and save it.
Huh.
Or apply it, whatever it was. It was only until I did that it freed it and I was allowed to make my changes and fix it. And now it's working fine.
I still think it was intermittent hardware.
Yeah.
I have never seen that before and I have, I don't know. I think it's something else going on there.
I vote for intermittent hardware.
All right.
I'm saving the DVD. I'll bring it, and you guys can see what you think. So anyway, but that's my review. I just wanted to share the pain and suffering I went through on this one. So it
was. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah. It was all right. It was all right. But the other thing I want to mention too, Rescatex has got, they got some nice little tools available, and I use an older stable version, but the newer version's got, it's got some Windows tools. You can promote a user to an admin user. You can recover you can recover Windows passwords, all sorts of different things. I never had a chance to test them out, but, I'm sure, they work just fine because the Linux tools I used off this distro, Rescatux, worked fine in fixing my problem.
All right.
So there you have it.
Well, thank you, Mary.
Yeah. Okay.
We ready for the next?
Intermittent hardware.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right. News.
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 News. News.
I have two stories.
Ooh. Great. Is one of them the Fedora is going to be delayed story?
No.
Oh.
That's old news. That happens all the time.
I know. That's why I said I'm shocked.
No, first is about WordPress under attack again. Yes, there are some new vulnerabilities. Actually, it's not in WordPress itself. It's in a plugin, but the plugin doesn't have to be installed even. It just has to be on the server, and they can exploit it.
Really?
So, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
MailPoet. Now, MailPoet's fixed its stuff.
Yeah.
But you've got to fix MailPoet. So
when you say installed, do you mean actually installed or just enabled?
Because you're enabled. It doesn't have to be enabled.
Yeah, yeah. So it's installed, but it's not enabled, and it can still be exploited.
Yes.
And you know why?
It's why?
Because the code is still sitting there. You can browse to that path.
Yes.
Oh, and then go ahead and enable it and go through that.
Well, you can just run. Run those files
with
PHP. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
Yeah. And XML RPC is back. You'll remember a couple of months ago, it was a big thing they were using as a type of DOS against WordPress sites. Well, now there's a way to exploit.
You were just talking about that last night, right?
Well, no, with you on the way in today when we were coming in together.
Huh.
But yeah,
Oh, because that was the attack they were using on that server they took down, by the way.
Oh, right.
and yeah, it was WordPress. Update all your stuff.
Yeah. You got that?
I don't think we're using that plugin. So it's not just WordPress, it's that plugin.
Yes.
All right, Matt.
And my next story is how hackers hid a money mining botnet in the clouds of Amazon and others.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's this team and Rob Reagan and Oscar Salazar, and they're going to be delivering a talk on this at the DEF CON in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So what they did was they assembled made a script or maybe a full-fledged program, whatever you want to call it, to, you know how all these different cloud hosting places will let you get like a free month?
Oh, yeah.
So they developed all these fake emails and and built this 1,000 computer botnet.
Really?
With free web services.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and there's an API for all those, so you can easily script it out.
There's an app for that.
Yeah. So that's available. That article is on Wired, and they're going to be giving a talk on it at DEF CON.
Huh.
So, again, the title was How Hackers Hid a Money Mining Botnet in the Clouds of Amazon and Others.
Huh.
That's my news, yeah.
Hey, Tony, I'm sorry.
No, I don't. I have some security stuff, but not news. So
okay,
I'll go ahead and
talk about these things. You know, I mentioned, I think, during the distro talk, about Tails Linux. I do have that site that I didn't have before, but I'm going to post that this link to the article. And what the situation was, there was and you're right, it's primarily run as live CD. I think you probably could install it, but why would you? You're Tails. Right. I was wrong on that, so I just want to clarify that so nobody has to email us. But anyway, it says in one of the most recent NASA revelations by Glenn Greenwald on July 14th was about the Joint Threat Research Intelligence Group. Greenwald had published a catalog of their assorted tools and techniques. One of the tools in the catalog was called Havok. That's H-A-V-O-K, which stands for, actually they don't have it in here, but it says it's the second item on page 8 of the document. It does real-time website cloning and on-the-fly alterations. And so I have no idea, the author here says, I have no idea if there is an evil twin of tails.born.org, but if there were, redirecting people to it would be fairly easy. So that was the whole thing about the security, you know, still security issues, and there always will be. I mean, I think with anything that gets released. So they're thinking, well, you know, certainly, it could be fixed, but I guess how do you do it is probably the question. So, but anyway, this article goes into considerable detail. It's an excellent article. I have not given it justice. So anyway, so that's one item. This other one here is not really tech related exactly, but indirectly, because tech would be directly affected by it. And it was the solar storm of 2012. I guess some of the information about it is still coming out, as far as what a near miss it was, because it would have knocked us back to the Stone Age, apparently. And it was a near miss. It was, one of the, just a giant, coronal mass ejection that just missed the Earth. They said we would still be picking up the pieces 2 years later as far as the impact to electronics. And we came very close. And I think they said within the next, 10 years or so, we've got like a 10% chance of getting hit. So will we get hit?
Bring it on. Bring it on.
I don't know.
My systems are hardened. Bring it on.
Okay.
Hardened.
All right, but anyway, there's that. The other one, on Thursday, now, you know, I'm really connected to the markets, and I watch that. Amazon stock, I think yesterday, Thursday and yesterday, just tanked big time, because they released their earnings, and they weren't as, as expected. And when that happens, you know, company stocks typically tank. Well, Amazon also recently released their Fire phone. And Extreme Tech had an article about it, and they said they've called it a gimmicky mess unless you're looking for a buy now button in the shape of a smartphone. So, and that, you know, that makes sense when you think about it. I mean, because I think Google's big competitor is Amazon. Yeah.
I've heard that exact same review from a number of sources.
I mean, it's just a product delivery system.
It's junk unless you're looking for something to do Amazon Prime and buy things from Amazon.
Yeah. Although they do have that, what is that button that when you're panic mode or panic button?
It said buy now?
No, it's like if you're having a problem with your phone or something.
No, that's on the Kindle. I don't think that's
Yeah, they have it on the Fire
too. It's on
too.
The phone.
Yeah,
too.
On the phone. You can hit that button and then there's somebody live right there to walk you through what you want to do.
Oh, really?
So if you have a problem making a phone call or needing to add contacts or something, you can just hit that button and then somebody will walk you through how to do it.
Because that's supposed to be pretty nifty on the Kindle, but I didn't know the phone had the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I looked it up. I got a message because I have AT&T as my cell phone provider.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a message from them saying that the Fire is available. And you can go to the store, the AT&T store, and pick it up.
Ooh.
So there's like four of them within 15 miles of my house.
But they also dinged it for weak app selection and platform growing pains. They said one of the most important things to remember is that that Amazon Fire devices is that they're based on Android, but they're not real Android devices.
Right, they're like the Kindle.
Yeah,
because
you're locked out of official Google apps.
With the Kindle, they took Android and totally stripped it back. They really made it their own operating system. So
yeah, so. Yeah, and then the giant buy now button for Amazon services. So, yeah, so I thought that article was kind of interesting and in line with, you know, in keeping with their earnings release this week, which was kind of messy.
That commercial is very cute, and I laugh every time they have it.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it with the two little kids?
No.
That are talking like they're old people? Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, in the 9 years I've been on this planet, I haven't seen such a thing.
That's funny.
It cracks me up every time I see it.
So as far as news goes, that's all I've got. A couple of KDE Corner items. This past week, actually it was yesterday, they shipped the third beta release of KDE 4.14. You know, we kind of talked about having our little release get together.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
I thought we finalized that we were doing it at Atwater on
the day?
Yeah, on
the day.
On the
day of it, yeah.
You gotta let me know when it is so that I can get my time off requesting.
Yeah, I thought I did.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was the week after my camp out. I said I was going to be home.
Yeah, that helped me out.
Isn't it the 23rd?
I don't know. How you let me know is you send it to me in an email.
Okay.
August
right.
20-something.
Yeah, I believe that's when it is.
Because I will put in for it Monday. I'll put the time in off request in Monday.
All right, okay. So join us. Join us at
Atwater Brewery.
I expect everybody to fly in, no matter where you live. You have to join us.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. There's beer involved, so that
we'll buy you one beer for every 1,000 miles you come.
I'll be driving in circles. Okay. Look at my odometer; it did change. All right, so but anyway, so yeah, so that second beta release, or no, third, I think. And then also, there's an article about switching between Plasma 5 widget alternatives now. You're thinking, what the heck is that all about? If you've ever tried to add widgets to the taskbar, there can be related widgets, but they all occupy individual spaces. So what they're going to do is they are going to, in Plasma 5, they're going to have it so that they're kind of grouped and categorized. So I think that's great. Well, if you don't want to use it, Matt, you don't have to use it. You know, and besides that, maybe Clyde or one of those stripped down KDE alternatives will be available. You know.
I like my little individual buttons. I got my Opera, got my chat client, got my Firefox, got my Chrome.
Perfect. Perfect. You won't have to do anything. It's just for people like me who, you know, who use widgets incessantly. Okay.
Humbug.
No, I don't use them incessantly. But anyway, then there was an update for the KDE service menu. And you know, I'm a big KDE service menu fan. So, that was just released a couple of days ago. And I think that is all of the items that I have for the KDE Corner this episode.
All right.
So, what's next?
Next is, I had some security details. All right, so one I found is called Canvas Fingerprinting. Its online tracking is sneaky but easy to halt.
What is it?
It's a way that there's like over 5,000 popular websites that are, it's another way of tracking you online. And it doesn't involve cookies. So if you have cookies disabled, then this is a different way. And it uses this thing called the Add This plugin. And what it does is it downloads a little JavaScript and it uses your CPU or your video card to render an image. And it's a transparent image, so you can't see it happening. And then it sends back a fingerprint.
So it's like a beacon, but it...
Yeah.
All right.
And I first heard about this on the Security Now podcast. And he went through and did some calculations, and so I'm going off of his calculations. He says that it only sends back 6 bits of info.
So it's really easily kind of hidden in the...
Well, 6 bits is 64. It's binary 64. So there's only 64 possibilities. So it's really not that big of a fingerprint.
No, it's
not. I mean, we all would have individual ones because there's only 4 laptops sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
But if we, if you have 64,000, 1,000 people, every 1,000 people are going to have the same fingerprint. So, yeah, it's not really that big of a concern. I mean, and a couple of articles I saw said they, Whitehouse.gov mm-hmm. is using it and a couple other ones. The official Add This people that made it, they said that they disabled the code earlier this month, but they have mm-hmm. then the website has to update their code to the newest Add This plugin and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Anyway, so if you hear about it, say,
much ado
whatever.
About, much yeah. ado about nothing?
Exactly. It's non-news. And the other thing that's related to privacy is, did you hear about the EFF has a new plugin, kind of like the NoScript plugin?
I think I saw something about
and
that. I didn't take the time to read it.
It's called Privacy Badger. And
Badger.
It's by the EFF. Here, I'm going to post mm-hmm. the link in the IRC chat.
Or is it
it's
a little
plugin.
App? Or?
Uh-huh. It's a plugin for your browser. I'm running it in Chrome, and it tells you how many items are on that web page that could be doing tracking things.
Oh, okay.
And it also goes through and tells you.
Are you running?
I'm running it right now, and it blocks ads and stuff. So, mm-hmm. I think what I read on it is it uses the same code as the plugin blocker thing, or ad blocker plus.
Oh, okay.
It's based off of that code.
Okay.
And then I'll have the notes or link in the show notes for this. But it looks really cool. It says it's different from AdBlock Plus and Ghostery and other blocking extensions.
Yeah, I like Ghostery.
Right. And what it was is the reason the EFF wanted to do this is because each one of those, like AdBlock Plus, they have this list. And if mm-hmm. an advertiser pays pays them, then they'll let their ad come through to view on your site.
Yep.
So that's where the EFF said, we want something that's completely,
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Completely
wow.
oriented to the user
yeah.
and, for privacy concerns and everything. So that's what this privacy badger is really good for.
And I think the problem, a couple of days ago I was thinking about the whole blocking versus the revenue that a website needs in order to operate. And, if advertisers just didn't get so into trying to track you across the web. I mean, I want to make sure that websites I like and whose content I read and I appreciate that they get their revenue stream. But on the other hand, I don't want to be tracked across the internet.
Well, then you've got your two choices. You can either go to a pay to view model, or mm-hmm. you can go to an ad based model. The vast majority of people on the internet don't want to pay for any content. They just don't want to do it. The pay for
view model falls down unless they already had, like, the only one I can think of that actually worked out really well was the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. because they already had a very established customer base.
Oh, they do, yeah.
That went, that then migrated online, and they've got the money, and they didn't mind paying for the content. But overall, generally, when it's pay to view, mm-hmm. web-based content like that, people are going to just not do it. They're just not going to do it. So the only way these places have to get the money is through the ads.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you're stealing from them when you block the ads. That's
but this isn't. But this isn't blocking all ads. It's just blocking potentially tracking stuff. Right. So when I was at DistroWatch, like, I'll bring up DistroWatch right now. I see it's blocking two ads, but I can see three ads open and running right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a fourth ad and a fifth, sixth that's not being blocked. So
that tells
it doesn't
you
just
that
straight
the one
up
ad that's
block.
Being blocked is also tracking you? Is
yeah, it has some kind of tracking or something that's nefarious possible.
Okay. I see.
So, that's what I like about this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells you how many things are on here. And it says for DistroWatch that there's six potential. And it goes through and shows you. And you can turn them on and off individually.
Oh, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
I like that. If I don't mind ads. I just don't mind.
I just don't want them tracking you because you're going to some website and an ad will start tracking you. I agree.
It's another darn business. Hey, speaking of security, are you done talking about that?
Yeah, that was the end of it.
Okay. It doesn't have to be.
No, that's all I have.
Did you see the news this week about that Ford engineer who was fired, who had put listening devices?
I did hear something about it, just quick. I didn't hear any details.
Well, she apparently was fired, I want to say back in April or May or some, a few months ago. And she had put the allegation is that she had put listening devices, had hidden them in various conference rooms and things. She was a mechanical engineer at Ford, been there 17 years, and had allegedly done this.
Mm.
She was fired, and her lawyer is saying that those devices were there to help her transcribe meetings. And I'm thinking, why were they hidden then?
I mean, really?
You would just come right out and say, hey, I'm going to record this so I can help create the notes. But all the corporate type meetings or, you know, just the business meetings I go to, you've got somebody who sends those notes out at the end. And, you know, if they needed that kind of help, they are pretty upfront about it.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But then I was thinking to myself, because the FBI or the authorities came to her house and they confiscated all sorts of stuff, the typical kinds of stuff, the computers, email and all this. And I'm thinking to myself, if somebody were doing something like that, and you wanted it to be clean where they couldn't get your stuff, how would you do that? It seems to me that you would run a virtual machine and you do it all off the virtual machine because then you've got one file where it all exists and you could then kill that file and it's gone. Wouldn't that, because if you go out to the internet via that virtual machine out of VirtualBox, what is being picked up about the machine that has gone out there? It's about what you've described in your virtual machine, right? You know, it's got 2 gigs of RAM versus maybe the 4 that the physical machine has. It's got this, that, and the other thing. It's got video 30, maybe.
This, that, the other thing, and that thing, and those things. And
yeah, that stuff. But, you know, and again, that's kind of how my mind works, and that's why I'd be a good investigator, you know, a puzzle solver. But I always try to figure out how you could accomplish something like that. And it just seems to me by putting it all in a virtual machine, you've got only one file you got to worry about rather than stuff scattered all over. I mean, that's if I were a nefarious person, that's how I would do it. But I'm not. Of course, now that I've said this. But no, it's just that I've always wanted to be a private investigator.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's what I'll do.
Yeah, you can get a PI license.
Can I?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I should do. I should, I'll quit my job and I'll become a private investigator.
There you go.
I know
that's
someone.
People are living so much longer that they have careers in retirement. You know, and I'm.
Yeah.
You could do that. Retire and open your own PI shop.
That's right.
You could be like that. Oh, what's that one they write those books? That guy writes the books about the lady something. It's in Africa, though. The books are set in Africa, like in Nigeria, I think. Mm. She's a private investigator in Nigeria. Yeah.
Okay.
I forget what they're called.
Just lost audio stream, according to You see that?
Yeah, I see.
Okay. Wisher says we lost the butt stream there, buddy.
Oh no, our site still shows. Oh, it says online.
Yeah, and we're
the
still
numbers,
getting
it's counting, and we have
we're getting
wave moving.
Yeah. So anyway, but that was my comment on that whole thing. I mean, it sounds. And so they're thinking now industrial espionage. That's what she was doing. So.
Wow.
I mean, they have a, you're a mechanical engineer, which you would think someone who makes good money. You've been employed at a place for 17 years and you're alleged to have engaged in this kind of behavior.
Who is she stealing secrets for? GM?
I was going to say, I bet she's getting paid more for what that her other side thing is. To do that.
Maybe, but I don't know. There's just
How did they finally find...
It'd be pretty risky.
How long were these listening devices in place? And B, how did they finally find them?
And then also, how do they know it was her doing it?
Well, see, I mean, this just came to light this week, so I have a feeling that more and more information is going to be coming out as time moves on. But it kind of fascinated me that you've got somebody who's been with a company for... that. You're living kind of a lie, if indeed she's done this. You're living kind of a lie... There's sort of just the whole ethical thing. I don't know.
Well, some people's ethics are totally in the toilet. So.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, we'll move on, I guess, if there are no more security and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was it.
All right.
All right.
What we've got coming up next?
Listener feedback, right?
It's listener feedback time.
And
I'll stop it somewhere in that range because... the phone number doesn't work anymore.
I need
to fix that soundbite. Anyway, listener feedback. We had quite a few people email us and Google Plus message us. And a couple of the comments were about our asking about the list of distros that we go through. And so far they said, it does kind of go a little bit long, but they like having... the full list of distros that are being, because it's kind of like we have the mini distro watch section where it's just, you know, a short list so you can kind of look and get updated.
Yeah, we try to go into detail things that you won't find, you know, because DistroWatch does a great job of listing them, but they're a little bit hampered by space, of course, so they give you the links to go back and check these things out yourself if you wish. What we like to do is go back and gather some additional information about the current release or maybe some interesting thing about that distro itself and then make that available. And talk about it a little bit. So, you know, something funny or something interesting about it.
Right. We had another, Jason emailed us saying that there's multiple times that we talk over Mary and interrupt.
Yes, yes.
I have to disagree. I did that on purpose.
I kept talking, hoping that somebody would do that. Yeah. But
I think what he heard was that one show where you were remote recently. And in that situation, there's the lag of the internet involved. And we did talk over you, and you talked over us and a lot that episode. But it happens due to the internet lag and...
I think
when we're in the
I think that
room.
Was very prevalent, but it wasn't. I think that's kind of the extreme of what we've done, but I think it still happens from time to time.
I disagree.
But.
I'm bringing a clicker in, and I'm going to click it. You know how those grade school teachers would click.
Isn't there a KDE widget for that?
If there is, I'll find it. That's funny, but I don't notice it all that much. Every once in a while, I'll notice it. And I think it's just because you're trying to be helpful and maybe provide some additional information. And in your excitement, you just start talking.
Yeah.
Because there's sometimes where I have introduced a concept or a topic and I've mentioned what I know about it. And I might be just kind of coming to that logical conclusion. And then you guys kind of, you know, helpfully jump in and carry it on a little bit further. So. But I know that it's just not done on purpose, but we'll try to do a better job.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start to interrupt.
It's not something
you.
Malicious that we're trying to do.
No,
like
not
I
at
just
all,
did right now.
Because we're all friends.
Sorry, Mary.
We're all friends here in this basement.
I really don't think it was occurring. So.
Okay.
Mary's not the kind of person to sit idly by. She would have definitely pointed it out to us.
That's right.
All right. We have another one. We have a quick note from a Frenchman living in the Netherlands.
Yes.
Oui, oui.
Yeah, he said he was listening to episode 129, and that's where we talked a little bit about my work and the projects. And he says, even though he lives in the Netherlands, he works for Epic also. So that's kind of a cool connection that we have.
Yeah, that was neat.
Yeah.
I saw that.
So. Woohoo.
And Matt's hat is still bald.
Still bald. Gonna stay bald.
How long does it take you to do that? Oh, you get a little stubble up there.
I know. I didn't shave it yesterday, and I should have. So, I'm going out with a friend. A bunch of us are going out. It's his birthday on Sunday, so we're going out tonight and paint the town red. So,
don't do that to any Dan Gilbert buildings, or we'll see you in court. And the reference to that is some little suburban girls. You know, the kind of the little cool girls. I mean, they're kind of cute girls, but they came downtown to Detroit in downtown and were spray painting buildings owned by Dan Gilbert. Now, Dan Gilbert is the CEO of Quicken Loans, and he's done a lot to revitalize downtown.
A lot. He's really big on Detroit.
Yeah, we call it Gilbertville, downtown Detroit. But anyway, these girls were spray painting, and he put the word out. I mean, they were caught on some security cameras, and so he put the word out, published the pictures of them that weren't... I mean, they weren't exceptionally clear, but they were clear enough that people were able to identify them. And now these three girls have been arraigned on graffiti. But Gilbert doesn't want him to go to jail. I think he wants him to do some community
service.
Clean
the paint off.
Well, clean the paint off for one thing. But it's been pretty embarrassing for him, I think. Not anything that they expected. So.
Right. We had another comment on our YouTube video from Nathan. He says that it's another great show. With regarding to the Distro Talk segment, it's nice to have a little extra tidbits of information.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think we're going to keep up with what we're doing then.
Okay.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of, I think three people gave us feedback on that, and all of them were for more Distro Review stuff.
Yeah.
Not Distro Review, but Distro Watch stuff.
Mm-hmm. And we're happy to do that.
Yeah. Is there anything else? That's all I saw for listener feedback.
Yeah, I think I'd seen a couple of the emails. I don't get the Google Plus. Well, I think I may get them somewhere. I just don't look for it. So I appreciate the fact that you pull those out. Because I don't.
Yeah, you have to actually go and look.
I have to go and look.
I don't do it either, Mary. Okay. I'm there with you. If it doesn't come to my inbox, I ain't talking about it.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't realize that. So, all right. Well, thanks for doing that, Tony.
You're welcome.
It's appreciated. And thanks for all the sound work you're doing over there.
All right.
Did we talk about Tom from G Plus? His did come to my inbox.
What I just said?
I don't know, because I'm trying to do a couple of things here at the same time, have conversations with online people, and
What did Tom say?
No.
He was. I'm considering taking a Linux class, except I middle clicked now, and now it's going to be all effed up.
Oh.
Because Gmail doesn't let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he didn't say the middle click thing. You said that.
Oh, yeah, I said that. Okay, yes.
I'm like, I just now found it. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not what it says.
Oh, yeah, we got to clarify that.
I middle-clicked on his email instead of left-clicking.
Yeah, there was a little piece of information that was left out of there that made it sound like he was saying that.
It says his Linux teacher is Linus Torvalds.
Yeah, but he's not really.
It can't be.
Linus does the ad for it.
Oh.
But he is not going to teach the class.
No. Okay.
So.
All right.
Any other feedback?
I don't think so.
And Max, did we talk about Max?
Max.
Yes.
Okay.
That was the first comment. I didn't put his name on it, but yeah, that was that first comment I read. I think that's it.
I'm tapping my laptop, Tony. I'm really sorry.
All right. I guess what's...
Are you ready for our song?
Music.
Yeah, do you have music?
Featured music of the week.
I don't have music.
Are we going to be doing the random number with Nine Inch Nails
again? I was just going to say. I was going to make that comment. So what do we get?
Let's go to CC Hits.
All right. We're going to spin that roulette wheel.
That's right. CCAHits.net.
Okay. That's CreativeCommonsHits.net?
That's right.
Did you talk about that before?
Yeah, and there was a few songs I've chose before because it was on the list
here. But I didn't know about the site.
Yeah, and it gives, it's a whole podcast that they run.
Okay.
You can get the daily stuff, what they show every day, and then it also shows, you can vote for what you like.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, number one is I'm Not Dreaming by Josh Woodward.
I would rather we take a song from Craig's podcast.
Oh.
We'll do that next time. You find the song.
Yeah, you find the song. And
all right. I'll have Craig give me a song.
All right.
All right. Here is I'm Not Dreaming by Josh Woodward.
I was a soldier boy in the twilight of my youth, when I still could feel love and a trust in above for the truth. I fought with bravery, then I left my gun behind. But the misery I've seen never wiped itself clean from my mind. Now I'd never, ever close my eyes completely when I'm
All right.
I guess we're moving on to...
To the end
of the show.
It's the end. All right, so you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Oh, and I said it in the wrong order.
Yes, I know.
It's supposed to go episode name and then our names. Isn't it? Further.
All right.
Why do we do it backwards?
We just always do.
Yeah.
We just always have.
All right, so you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 131.
Sysadmin.
Woohoo.
Yeah. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, have a good fortnight. See you next fortnight. And please, somebody, come up with a better thing for me to say than fortnight.
Couple of weeks.
Right.
See you in a couple of weeks. That kind of flows.
I'll try it. I'll give a couple of weeks a try next week. Or next time.
Same bad time, same bad channels.
we'll try a couple of weeks first.
See in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Have a good couple of weeks.
All right.
There you go.
All right.
See ya.
Goodbye, everybody on YouTube. Oh, and if you like our new video and everything, tell us.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
It's going to look clear.
All right.
And we may want it to go back to being fuzzy.
Right. Bye-bye.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Fight my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Haunty Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com. IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Are we are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.